Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. This podcast is focused on evolving the U.S. clinical trial infrastructure for faster, more efficient clinical trials and better emergency response. From the 2023 DPHARM Disruptive Innovations to Modernize Clinical Research Conference. For more information on the DPHARM conference, editorial, podcasts, or webcasts, visit dpharmconference.com or theconferenceforum.org. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
So with this panel, we have Jennifer Roberts, who's director of the Resilient Office at ARPA-H. We have Dr. Brian Anderson, who is the Chief Digital Health Officer at MITRE. And we have Grail Sipes, JD, who is an Assistant Director in Health Outcomes Research for the White House OSTP. Alphabet soup again, guys, right? So let's start with the first question of, Grail, what's OSTP?
I'm so glad you asked. OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, is an office within the White House that has existed for decades, and its job is to advise the president on all aspects of science and technology and to advance American innovation in science and technology. Our director is Dr. Aarti Prabhakar. And one interesting thing to know is that prior to this administration, OSTP worked across a number of different areas but did not have a particular focus in health and life sciences, but now it does. And we have a health outcomes division, which is where I work. And so we're very, very focused on using science and technology to improve health outcomes.
Thanks, Grail. I think you're starting to see why I have goosebumps with this panel. Brian, would you mind explaining to us a little bit about MITRE?
Absolutely. So probably many of you have not heard what MITRE is. MITRE is a not-for-profit that was started about 60 years ago, coming out of World War II, when a lot of the very smart people that were working at the time for the Defense Department were moving back into the private sector. Congress developed legislation to create what are called federally funded research and development centers, or FFRDCs, if we're going by the alphabet soup. FFRDCs have a congressional mandate to have no conflict of interest in terms of the services that we offer to the federal government, which essentially means we don't sell anything commercially. Our primary goal is to be a trusted business partner to our sponsors, which are the federal government. So we do innovative things across a variety of different sectors. MITRE started in the defense space. I help lead a lot of our strategic efforts in the digital health or health space, which is where we get to have the awesome opportunity to work with people like Grail and Jen and others throughout HHS.
Thanks, Brian. Okay, ARPA-H. Jen, that's a hard one.
Yeah. So hi, I'm Jen Roberts, Director of the Resilient Systems Office at ARPA-H, and ARPA-H is the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health. So we're brand new. We're a startup agency inside the federal government, which is pretty unusual. And if anybody's heard of DARPA before, DARPA started the internet, self-driving cars, GPS, foundations behind the Moderna vaccine. They have an interesting scientific discovery model. It's focused on breakthrough technologies. Folks try some type of moonshot for 3-4 years. We give folks plenty of resources to try these crazy ideas, and hopefully some of them work. That's the business model that we're bringing over into health, to say, how can we revolutionize and jumpstart lots of breakthrough tech and breakthrough biomedical research in the health sphere?
I am privileged to be on this stage with all of you and to build off of the discussion that we had earlier with Mickey and ONC. And I know, Grail, that you've been working with ONC and ARPA-H and MITRE and the FIRE community with some synergies to the Moonshot Initiative and the biodefense strategy in clinical trial improvements. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, and I too feel incredibly lucky to be able to work with these folks and others in this space. Within OSTP, we're working on a clinical trials readiness initiative to try to improve sort of our ability as a community to do clinical trials, to make them more efficient, faster, and to be able to do them on a larger and sort of more broadly distributed scale. So one of the ways we are able to do that is because we are positioned within the White House, we're able to work across agencies and really figure out how to coordinate and orient different efforts to try to make them amplify each other. So I guess that's how I would describe it. I know we'll get into more of this as we go through the discussion, but obviously we heard from Mickey this morning, ONC has got such a huge role to play. We're looking to ride on top of, to use Jen's phrase, a lot of the standards that ONC is putting in place. ARPA-H has got some really exciting visions in this space, which Jen will talk about a little bit. Brian's been a key player, and Amy and others within the accelerator community are also a big part of thinking about the data capture, data standards piece of this in terms of the challenges facing us. So it's really great to be able to work across all of those entities, and I know we'll get into more of that, but that's sort of our role.
Thanks, and we're going to be really organic here because this is fun, guys. This is what an opportunity, right? So they're going to jump in and add on to each other's thoughts as we go through. You brought up the different areas of working with the fire accelerators and so forth, and recently you put out two RFIs, one that was more general around clinical trials and one that was more specific to data capture and so forth. What were you hoping to learn from those RFIs?
Okay, so RFI is another great acronym within the federal alphabet soup. It stands for Request for Information. So what could possibly be more exciting than the government asking people for information? But we were really excited about these RFIs because you can't just go out and poll people, right? There's a very prescribed way of doing things. And so when you're at OSTP, if you want to know what people are thinking, you have to put out a request for information. Okay, so We did two of these, and I would say the goal at a high level was both to get information back on a series of topics, which I'll get to in a second, which we did. We got a tremendous response, which was really, really helpful to us, but also to at least begin to lay out what we thought might, lay out the foundations of some of the issues that we thought were key or important. So in the more general RFI, which was about improving the clinical trial infrastructure generally, it was about, how do we reach agreement? If you want to do something across a broad number of sites, how do you reach agreement on some of the key things that are stumbling blocks in advance of having to do the trial, on things like data sharing, in the case of an outbreak like COVID, should there be some kind of federal level governance or thinking about what kind of protocols are most important to deploy on a large scale? How do we get together a warm base of research so that there's more training and readiness? How do we get into communities? How do we make the populations more diverse? As everybody knows, that's a major, major problem in all kinds of trials across the country. So that was sort of the main RFI, but we also, from the beginning, and Jen at that time was my colleague at OSTP, we worked together on this, we wanted to, and this is something that was very much part of Jen's portfolio, we wanted to think about interoperability and data challenges at the outset, at the beginning, rather than running into those challenges like a brick wall at the end of the policy process. And so we did a companion RFI pretty much at the same time that sort of said, how are we going to use common APIs, to make sure that we can push out protocols and gather a consistent set of data elements if we want to do, larger, faster, more efficient clinical trials, or just to make any clinical trial more efficient. So the RFIs really helped us both get back a lot of good information and also helped us try out some ideas.
Thank you, and thank you for being interested in what we have to say as a community. I know a lot of groups responded to your RFIs. I think the question everyone thinks about when they ask and hear you're working in clinical trials, I'm going to say clinical research because I have an issue with the word trials, but in clinical research, but are you just looking specifically at clinical research? Are you looking at translational research? And this is for any of you. What exactly kind of research are you really focusing in on? Or is there one specific?
Yeah, I'd say we're interested in both of those, right? Because we want things on the clinical trial. We, ARPH, are going to be developing all kinds of next-gen type therapies and platforms, so ultimately we will also be interested in that translational. So ideally, what we want is to be able to create a distributed clinical trial infrastructure that can accelerate our ability to get next-generation approaches tested and into the real world.
Okay, you brought up next-gen ideas, so I'm going to have to ask it, guys. Randomized controlled trials. Where are we at with that in our vision here? It's a gold standard, but there's a lot of other things that people are talking about right now. What are your thoughts about randomized controlled trials and other models that we could use?
It's a great question, Amy. I'll offer my perspective, and it's informed by, I'll start with 5-6 years ago at MITRE, we launched an effort with Monica Bertinoli, who was then a surgeon at Brigham, around how do we rethink doing clinical trials in a more pragmatic way, in a more simplified, more straightforward way, using real-world data or data that was captured as close to the standard of care as possible. And we did that and envisioned doing that still in a way that leverages randomized control trials. Because to your point, gold standard, it controls in a wonderful way for a number of confounders and biases. That being said, one of perhaps the most painful lessons I think many of us learned in the pandemic was that sometimes we don't have time to set up an RCT and to manage an RCT. Sometimes we want to leverage prospective observational efforts, and doing that with the kinds of clinical infrastructure that Grail and Jen are looking to build and invest in might be the best answer, right? In the next pandemic or in an urgent situation where we need real-world evidence we might be okay with a level of messiness, and we don't necessarily need the kind of randomization. That can be okay. Or it might be another use case where it's post-market surveillance and we don't necessarily need the kinds of RCTs that we're used to when we have new novel molecules. So, I think in sum, to answer your question more directly, we're looking for randomized controlled trials in addition to other manners or methods of conducting clinical research in this space, leveraging the infrastructure that Grail is speaking about.
I think that's exciting. I hope you guys are excited about that too. I love hearing that it's not just going to be status quo, but that you're being so open to how can we do this in a completely different way without giving up what we already know works. I think that's what's really important. We want to stay somewhat within our comfort zone, but we also want to make sure that we're reaching out and doing clinical trials in a way, I just did it, clinical research in a way that is more progressive. So when we were talking about, oncology and so forth, that we all that work in the pharmaceutical industry have many therapeutic areas that we serve. And so all of them are equally important to us and to our friends and our families and even ourselves, who are the patients that make up clinical research. But as you're looking forward to making this clinical trials infrastructure in this new world, I'll call it, is there going to be this for all therapeutic areas? Is there one you're focusing in on? Is there maybe one that you want to start with? What's your thoughts about that?
I'll comment on that one. I think that's a really good question, and We definitely want to build an infrastructure that works better across therapeutic areas, because we want to get out of silos generally. That said, I think that there are certain areas that could be good as initial use cases, and cancer is definitely one of those. Probably every single one of us in this room has been touched by cancer somehow, either us or someone we love. And there are a number of reasons why, the Biden administration has made the cancer moonshot a huge priority. The cancer moonshot is actually located in the same office where I work, so we have a lot of synergies and work closely together. So I think that as we think about how to bring clinical trials into communities, make them more diverse, make them more effective, bring in the patient view, all of those things. Oncology is a great use case to look at doing all of those things. I think that that's something that's very much on everybody's radar. At the same time, we also want to be readier to handle outbreaks than we were during COVID from the research perspective. And we also want to look across other therapeutic areas for sure. There are many chronic diseases that, cause just as much misery and are just as much of a cost in many ways on the system as cancer is. We definitely want to look across therapeutic areas, and it's just a question of figuring out what are some of the initial use cases for demonstrations.
So I completely agree, Grail. One other way of looking at this, so when we think about the extensibility of an approach that starts in cancer and moves out to other domains, there's this concept that you may have heard from many in leadership in NIH of a standard health record for research. And when we think about how it can start in cancer, right, taking a pragmatic clinical trial approach, leveraging something like, you may have also heard of the Minimal Common Oncology Data Elements, or M-code, right, that doesn't necessarily need to be just for cancer, right? The approach that that leverages and the downstream benefits to engage FQHCs or rural clinics or critical access hospitals where you have a minimal set of data elements that is specialty specific, focused and enabling the collection of the minimal set of data elements that you need for your primary endpoints, you can do that in cardiology, you can do that in pulmonology, you can do that in immunology. It's really about a framework-based approach that you can extend out to different domains, but having that specific use case of research in mind. And so I think that's one of the things that gets us really excited is what is that standard health record for research broadly look like, starting with cancer, but moving to other domains, engaging as diverse equitable set of patients that can be part of these studies across our society. The last thing I'll say about that is, because Mickey spoke, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the Trust Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, or TEFCA, if you heard about that this morning. What that will unlock is a broader framework of trust that allows this data or these data sets to be exchanged from health systems to research organizations. You even contemplate directly from a patient to a research organization, so it can be done at home, as I think one of our guests had described earlier, the importance of decentralized trials and being able to collect the data at home. All of that can be enabled by TEFCA, and prioritizing that is going to be really important. And so what that will take is working with industry to understand how do we think through consent? How do we think through de-identification and the transmission of this data in a safe, privacy-preserving way between health systems and research organizations? We don't have the answers to these yet, but it will require working in partnership between government and industry to answer questions like that as we build out this standard health record for research.
So for those of you that were listening today to Mickey, you may have heard him refer to having in USCDI some of the therapeutic area specific data points, which is what Brian just spoke of. And the insider verbiage for that is M-code. So now you can all walk out with some alphabet soup. But she threw a new alphabet soup in there on us, which was FQHN, I think, was the
FQHCs,
one.
FQHCs, Federally Qualified Health Centers. Sorry. Lots of, yes.
Yeah, you got to go easy on us with the alphabet soup, but great with them.
I think, one of the points that hopefully everyone is hearing, throughout the day and certainly here, the importance of engaging patients that come from traditionally unreached populations is so critical moving forward as we build this new clinical infrastructure of the future. We want everyone's stories to be told in this. We want these therapeutics to be correctly identified and tailored for the populations all throughout our society, not just, you know, highly educated urban people that are traditionally part of trials that come out of, you know, AMCs, academic medical centers, excuse me.
The audience now knows I'm spicy, so I like to push back a little bit. So we talked about these RFIs and the information that you've received from them, and I know that you all work very closely together. Is there information that really stood out to you that you were like, aha, or was there information that you were like, I need more about that from those RFIs? Was there anything specific in there that you were like, wow, that, thank goodness these people responded? Because, and just so you know why I'm saying this, I'm trying to get all of you out there to respond next time so that you can know that they're really reading these. So I'll let you guys answer.
Well, first, a huge thank you. I've already seen today many, many people who come from organizations who responded to these RFIs, and I thank them all again because we really got a tremendous and very helpful set of responses to both RFIs. I would just highlight two things so that I don't talk too long. But one of them is in terms of areas from that, you know, having seen all of the responses to the RFIs that are, I think are really, really important to follow up on. One is how to establish trustworthiness in communities when we do clinical research. This is something I think is on everybody's mind, but figuring out how exactly to do it is challenging because the traditional model of how trials get set up is not driven off of that. And so that is one area that I and others, I think, are very actively thinking about. Because again, it gets back to speaking about what does it mean to improve the clinical trials infrastructure. It means trying to make, you know, figure out a way to make this system work better for everyone, whether you are the pharma company who needs to do a more diverse clinical trial because you're under a mandate to do that for your phase three now, or whether, you know, you are someone at an FQHC who needs to get your site involved in research so that people in your community can, you know, so that data can be gathered out of your community that's going to help them, you know, with the health issues that they struggle with. So that's something that's very much on our minds. Another thing, kind of switching gears, but it's also very important, and I know we'll talk more about this, is we talked about this specifically in the RFI on data capture. What are some ways to vet and pilot better ways to do data capture, data management, again, on a larger scale? You know, the technology is there to do this, and many of the people in this room already, you know how to use it, have developed it. The question is, the challenge is, how do we figure out how to do that across a broader number of sites when it's necessary to do so? So those are two things I would highlight.
So, Jen, I gotta say, I'm feeling pretty impressed that I'm sitting next to somebody that's taking on the challenge of a group that went, is growing out of what DARPA created and really revolutionized industries, many industries. And so, I promised I wasn't gonna put you on the spot, so she may not be my friend after this, but. I'll leave it open to all of you, so I wouldn't put Jen on the spot, but coming from that kind of group of people who can do those things and create such a change in an industry, and obviously everybody in this room is very focused on changing the industry, can you share what your vision is or what you would like to see or where you would like to see it go? And I'm not calling on any one individual so that you still be my friend. What do you guys envision?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that we're interested in doing. One, we're looking to build what we're calling ARPANET H. So we want to build a nationwide network that does actually a number of things. So one will allow us to test technologies that are coming out of the ARPA-H program, so these new revolutionary advances that cross a number of different biomedical fields, and also potentially are doing advances on the artificial intelligence and the infrastructure side too. So we want this ability to reach all 50 states, folks from all different backgrounds and demographics in order to be able to test and see whether the technologies we're developing are helping people in the real world. And then we also have an aspect of that network that's really working to build in support. So our investor catalyst network, supports from venture capital, supports from folks that are familiar with regulatory processes, so that as people are developing new products, there's a path toward commercialization and that type of thing. And along with that, we're very interested in making some core investments in next generation of clinical trial infrastructure. So we want to be able to leverage the infrastructure that the pharma industry and a number of our government partners have already put in place, and then say, how do we move further? How do we, say, make it so that we're pushing clinical trials closer to point of care, making it so that we can recruit people much more quickly, and make it so that we can take common protocols and distribute them easily across many sites and get the data back in a high fidelity way that makes it easy for us to reach patient populations that are representative of the groups that we're trying to serve.
Well, you're at the right conference because that's what we're trying to do too. Go ahead, Grail.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something, picking up on what Jen was saying. I think we're all incredibly excited about ARPA-H's interest in this space because I think they bring a really unique perspective, in addition to their other resources, on how to develop technology and how to fill gaps, and so I think it's really tremendous. I would just add that in terms of, you know, aligned with what Jen was saying, what I, you know, in terms of aspirations for where I would like to see all of this go. I would love to get to a place where the whole community, all of us, you know, in the country, are better able to launch trials that are simpler, broader in scale, and can be more fit for purpose. Right? I mean, it all depends on what, you know. Not all clinical trials are going to be alike. There's going to be still going to be a huge range, but we need to have a better ability to do things in a simpler and more efficient and cost-effective way, because clinical trials in general have just gotten way too expensive, and it's not, you know, supportable, I think, in the long run. And what I am really excited about is that I think we're at a moment where it is possible to make a lot of progress in doing that. So one thing that I really want to get across is that part of our goal at OSTP, and I think everybody's up here, is to really try to leverage the processes that are already out there working, and try to bring them together and make them amplify each other. So we're not trying to, you know, change the way everything is currently being done. We're trying to pick up on what's working, both in industry and in the government sector, bring it together, and try to make it work together in the most amplified way possible.
So I know they're dinging me, but I'm going to pretend like I can't hear them. Brian, would you like to add anything? And then I have one final question.
Listening to Jen and Grail, yeah, I'm reflecting on, so there's this famous legislator from here in the Massachusetts area, for from here, you know, Barney Frank. Barney once said, all government is something that we decide to do together. In addition to the technical advances that ARPA-H is going to be focusing on, one of the things that excites me the most about ARPA-H is its ability to pull different government agencies together to do something in a collected, coordinated way. And so in this specific space, right, bringing together the FDA, bringing together ONC, NIH, and ARPA-H, helping to lead the effort in how we rethink and redo clinical research, right? What are the new kinds of regulatory science that we need to think about if we're going to look at things like causal inference or other kinds of machine learning models that can help impute, you know, the messiness of real-world data? Those are the things that really excite me, and I think that's, you know, part of the vision of the future for ARPA-H, is how we bring government agencies together to do something really revolutionary for all of society.
Well, I want to be a part of this too, and ARPA-H sounds pretty cool to me. So if I want to get engaged, or any of my colleagues out here want to get engaged, can we be part of the party too?
Yes.
We're very interested in both recruiting folks to join the ARPANET H. Look for announcements as soon as next week on how to get involved in that. And we're also interested in building public-private partnerships toward these common goals. So we'd love to learn more about what you guys would like to see and how we might work together.
Thank you all for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come. I really appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. For more information on the DFARM conference, editorial, podcasts, or webcasts, visit dfarmconference.com or theconferenceforum.org. Thank you for listening.